Now call the case of 23-11411, Joseph Simone versus Secretary of Homeland Security.
Morning. May it please the court. I'm Don McCoy, representing the appellant, Joseph Simone. Mr. Simone is with me this morning in the gallery. In the appeal, we're asking the court to revisit 2006 decision in Castro versus the Secretary of Homeland Security in light of changes that were made to the law in 2012. The Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act had a specific provision in it which modified the civil service rules on protection of transportation security officers such as Mr. Simone. The committee report on that particular provision, and it's directed specifically at the Transportation Security Administration, notes that the position that Mr. Simone held was on the front lines of Homeland Security and our national security system. And for that reason, the committee actually said that the TSOs deserved the same protection that other employees in the Department of Homeland Security are afforded. Joe's situation, my client's situation, demonstrates why that legislation was necessary and why it was passed.
Do you think Congress could have or should have been more specific if that was what it was intending to do?
Well, it did say, Your Honor, that the that it was including screeners or transportation security officers, the particular job description that was previously excluded from some of the non-discrimination statutes, such as the Rehabilitation Act, which is what we're proceeding under. Explained that that specific provision was necessary because prior to that, the administrator of TSA had virtually unfettered authority to set standards and to employ screeners.
But the Department of Homeland Security is arguing that, okay, the WPEA does bring back some of the Rehabilitation Act protections, but it doesn't provide your client with a federal court remedy.
That is their argument, Your Honor, and there's a number of flaws to it. The Secretary is arguing that the standard should be, or the provision we're talking about, Section 2304 is how it was codified, limits the rights and the remedies of Mr. Simone. There's no limiting language in the statute itself, though. And in fact, there's broader language that not only makes the provisions, the anti-discrimination provisions in Section 2302 covering people in Mr. Simone's job description, but it also says that they're covered by any law implementing those provisions and by any law providing a remedy for those provisions, and they're covered by any regulation that implements those provisions. In this case, the regulation that implements those provisions is 29 CFR Part 1614, which is an EEOC regulation. And at section 1614.302, it describes the type of case that involves both appealable personnel action coupled by or motivated by discrimination. So the limitations are not in the statute. More importantly, there's flaws with the argument that Mr. Simone could have proceeded to the Merit System Protection Board. At the time, now he was discharged in 2015, TSOs have had no right to appeal anything to the Merit System Protection Board until a memorandum of understanding was executed in 2021 between the TSA administrator and the executive director of the Merit System Protection Board. Even so, there's still no statutory right for a TSO to take a case to the MSPB. This memorandum makes it very clear that it's just a service that's being provided to TSA by the MSPB. It's not the same as other DHS employees enjoy. Let me explain, backing up a second, this court has already rejected, and some time ago, the argument that these discrimination cases should be taken to the MSPB. Doyle v. Marsh was a case that we cited 1985, and it was followed by another case that actually dealt with the Rehabilitation Act, Mullins versus Crowder. And it's been well established in the 11th Circuit that the position that the department is taking is incorrect.
What about the department's argument in light of what you're talking about now? The department has argued that you waived any mixed case argument that would allow your client to proceed in a variety of ways if he's alleging discrimination. What's your response to that?
At a loss as to where we could have waived it, Your Honor. It was certainly central to our argument in the district court. The district court, however, didn't get to that question. The ruling there was just that the Castro case controlled, and subsequent legislation couldn't change that. That was position that Judge Ruiz took in the lower court, so there was no question when we filed our initial brief. However, in the reply brief, we answered the question that the secretary raised regarding mixed cases. The specific regulation that handles mixed cases or provides the procedure for them is in section 1614.302, and I'm sorry I'm over time, but to finish up, the subsequent subsection 1614.310 does provide that those cases will go to the district court. Thank you.
Reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. McCoy.
Good morning, AUSA Brittany Panuccio for the government. Citing this court's precedent in Castro versus the Secretary of Homeland Security, the district court correctly dismissed Mr. Simone's case for failure to state a claim because the ATSA precludes his disability discrimination claims under the Rehabilitation Act. Contrary to what Mr. McCoy has told you this morning, enactment of the WPEA does not supersede the ATSA's preclusive effects on Mr. Simone's claims under the Rehabilitation Act. The WPEA was enacted as an amendment to the Civil Service Reform Act, and it now provides limited, specific whistleblower and other types of protections to TSOs through the CSRA's very specific prohibited personnel practices regime.
Isn't the heart of this case a battle of the notwithstanding clauses in the two statutes? I mean, to me, maybe that's too simple, but that's what it comes down to. Do we have another case like this that has two different notwithstandings? And I'm not sure that we do, and I wonder how we solve that problem.
Your Honor, I agree that the competing notwithstanding clauses are central to deciding this case. And the Supreme Court has given instructions to courts when facing these sorts of situations. And their instructions are to regard the two laws as effective whenever possible. So when two statutes are capable of coexistence, it's the duty of the courts to regard both as effective. And that's a Supreme Court case, Radzenauer versus Touche, Ross, and Co. So if we decide that certain provisions conflict, we have to decide where the conflict is and to what extent they conflict to resolve the conflict between the two statutory provisions. In this case, Section 2304 of the WPEA can be harmonized with the ATSA's Section 111D by recognizing that now, after passage of the WPEA, TSOs like Mr. Simone have certain limited administrative protections under the CSRA that they did not previously have before the WPEA. And coming back to your question earlier, Judge Grant, to opposing counsel about whether they could have been more specific, I do think that supports this argument that the two statutes can be read harmoniously.
Let me ask you about that, though. Your position is that before the WPEA was passed, the ATSA excluded TSA screeners from pursuing challenges under the CSRA, right?
Yes, that's what this court held in Castro.
Right, but if the WPEA allows screeners to pursue those challenges under the CSRA, then it does repeal the ATSA to some extent. Isn't that your position? So they can't actually be read in harmony completely.
They can be read harmoniously to an extent to give effect to both laws. So there is some limited conflict, and as a result of this very limited conflict, TSOs now have that right, Your Honor. So they do have that right. If they were to have greater rights, like Mr. McCoy is arguing that they have, to bring suit in district court, for example, Congress could have chosen language besides prohibited personnel practices. That's the title of that statutory provision. They could have placed the amendment outside of Chapter 23. They could have indicated that in the text of Section 2304. And when looking at the specific text, it doesn't actually invoke Section 794A of the Rehabilitation Act, which provides a federal court remedy. It only briefly references the Rehabilitation Act for definitional purposes to say that these TSOs have a right to pursue relief through this CSRA framework to contest disability discrimination on the basis of a handicapping condition as prohibited in the Rehabilitation Act. So it's merely for definitional purposes. There's no language in the WPEA that broadly incorporates the Rehabilitation Act. So there is this.
I mean, 2302B says any employee who has authority to take, direct others to take, recommend, or approve any personnel action shall not, with respect to such authority, discriminate for or against any employee or applicant for employment on the basis of handicapping condition as prohibited under Section 501 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. I'm not sure how it could be much more clear than that.
I agree, Your Honor, that it is incorporating the Rehabilitation Act for definitional purposes to clearly state that TSA may not discriminate against TSOs on the basis of disability, and it clearly provides them a remedy under this prohibited personnel practices regime in the CSRA, and they have that right. Contrary to what Mr. McCoy told you, TSOs did have that right after the WPEA was passed in 2012. They did not need a memo in 2021 from the administrator of TSA to give them those rights. The memo that he references provided much broader rights than the statutory rights that the WPEA gave them. Mr. Simone did have that opportunity, and he did not pursue it.
So the district court in this case ruled that the WPEA did not abrogate Castro, but it seems to me that the government is arguing that, in fact, it did, but that there is still another reason why Mr. Simone loses. So if I'm accurately summarizing that, are you suggesting we simply return this to the district court, say you got it wrong on Castro, but now you need to decide the scope of the abrogation, whether there's a remedy in federal court whatnot?
I read the district court opinion to recognize Castro's holding that the ATSA precludes disability discrimination claims like Mr. Simone's, and then to take light of the WPEA and say that does not change the ultimate conclusion. Whether or not it does affect the analysis, because the court had to consider whether and to what extent the two statutes conflicted, but the court ultimately determined that the WPEA did not provide those rights that Mr. Simone was claiming that they did. So he found that under 12b-6, he could not state a claim.
Was this secondary argument, I can't recall, made before the district court?
The exhaustion argument, yes. Trial counsel did make that argument in the district court, and the district court decided that it did not need to reach the exhaustion issue because it decided under 12b-6 that he couldn't state a claim.
Section 7703b2, actually all of section 7703 deals with judicial review of MSPB decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not an MSPB decision in this case. It seems to me under the Kleckner case, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, mixed cases can choose to bypass the MSPB. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, this is not a mixed case. So referencing the Kleckner decision, I don't think is terribly helpful. And I think that is perhaps where the Ruedas Rojas court went off course in their analysis of that case.
Is your argument this is not a mixed case because they waived that argument or for some other reason?
This is not a mixed case because this is a prohibited personnel practices case. My understanding of a mixed case in this scenario would be where, let's say a plaintiff brings a claim that can be independently reviewed by the MSPB and also a claim that cannot. So for example, something like hostile work environment claims and also a discriminatory termination claim. The MSPB would not review a hostile work environment claim. That would be a mixed case, and that's something that could go the other route before the EEOC and into the district court. What we have here are purely claims under the CSRA framework. When you view the ATSA language and the WPEA language together, the only avenue of relief that Mr. Simone has is by filing in the Office of Special Counsel, appealing to the MSPB if he so chooses, and then appealing to the Federal Circuit. That's the prohibited personnel practices regime, and he did not pursue that regime. If there are no further questions, the government respectfully requests that you affirm the district court. And we rest on our briefs. Thank you.
The government did devote much of its answer brief to the issue of exhaustion, an issue that Judge Ruiz in the court below explicitly declined to address. But the flaw in the argument, there are three ways to take a case of discrimination or whistleblowing retaliation up through these very convoluted regulations. Filing with the OSC, the Office of Special Counsel, is the one that the government has focused on. If the Office of Special Counsel finds a case, they can bring it independently to the Merit System Protection Board, but they rarely do. In fact, it's been noted that since they rarely do is one impetus that caused Congress to revisit the Whistleblower Protection Act and pass the WPEA. But if the special counsel turns down the case, which they often do, the recourse that the employee has is to file what's called an individual right of action appeal with the MSPB. And as I said, at the time that this came up, Mr. Simone was prohibited from going to the MSPB. But even assuming that he could have, the MSPB has a regulation on the scope of of evidence that can be presented at an IRA appeal, an independent right of action appeal, specifically excludes any evidence or any claim of discrimination. That regulation is 5 CFR 1209.2C. So even if Mr. Simone had an opportunity to follow the scheme that the government theorizes here, he couldn't have presented his discrimination claim in a IRA appeal. The government cites a case, it's hard to pronounce, Zacharias Siewitz versus DOJ, a Fourth Circuit case that explains why the plaintiff in that case could not bring discrimination claims in the context of an IRA appeal. Let me say on remand, this case should go to trial. It should give Mr. Simone an opportunity to show what he's tried to show through the circuitous administrative route. He met the medical guidelines that the administrator had in place. He was an able-bodied, and he still is an able-bodied person who served 8 years in a very strenuous position. He did it with not only without difficulty, but with commendations and awards along the way. And we have testimony from his supervisor saying that he never had any difficulty. His disability is a mild heart condition called mitral valve prolapse that occasionally caused some, what we would call them, heart murmurs or palpitations. When he did, he was advised by his doctor to take a day off from work, not to drive a car, stay home and rest. Along the way, and the Family Medical Leave Act that all of his colleagues had an entitlement to gave him an opportunity to take that day off and to call in sick when he had these heart murmurs. Along about 2013, the Fort Lauderdale Airport, the federal security director there, decided that he wanted to eliminate some of the people with chronic conditions like Mr. Simone's from their use of FMLA. And so the first bout was a human resource person, who, not medically trained, who told Mr. Simone that he was denying his request for Family Medical Leave because his condition was not serious enough to warrant that kind of accommodation. Mr. Simone complained about that, and the federal security director grudgingly granted him FMLE during 2014. During 2014, he only used 2 days of a 12-week entitlement to family medical leave. But when he applied to renew his entitlement, the same person who had said it was not a serious illness said it was so serious he was going to submit him for a fitness for duty evaluation. The doctor in Washington who did the fitness for duty evaluation based it entirely on the doctor, his cardiologist's request for the intermittent leave under FMLA. No examination, in other words. And the doctor that evaluated the paperwork said that it was inconclusive. There was no evidence on which he could disqualify him under the medical guidelines. But nonetheless, for some unexplained reason, he would not clear him for continued duty, so he was removed from federal service. He should be given an opportunity to show all of this to a jury, Your Honor, and to vindicate his rights under the Rehabilitation Act. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a 10-minute break now before our last case of the day. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.